To the Angle Podcast, where we explore the intersection of technology, creativity, and innovation in Africa. Today, we're diving into the transformative world of XR, or extended reality, for those who don't know, with a guest who's been at the forefront of this space here in South Africa, but has been in some projects that go far beyond that. Joining us is Dale Deacon, a digital artist, creative technologist, and founder of Team Epic. Dale's work spans 3D, XR, and Web3 technologies with a focus on immersive storytelling that bridges the boundaries of technology, art, and culture. His projects have premiered at events like the Venice International Film Festival and have earned accolades such as the Spirit of Raindance Award. Beyond his artistic achievements, Dale has been instrumental in building XR ecosystem in Africa. He's co-organized initiatives like We Are VR Josie, played a vital pivotal role in creating the Africa XR Report, which we'll get into a little bit, a community-driven effort to map the continent's XR potential. It was a hefty read at 320-odd pages, but yes.
Immersive?
Yeah, I know. We're exploring Dale's journey into XR, so we'll ask him a little bit about that, his unique challenges and opportunities for African creators in the space, and the groundbreaking projects and showcasing the future of immersive technologies. Well, you know, lofty words, but we'll get into it. I'm your co-host, Scott Peter Smith, co-founder of The Angle, a platform dedicated to exploring African perspectives on digital culture, media, money, and governance. And this here is?
I don't know. Scott, have you forgotten my name?
I know who you are.
Okay. I'm Stanley. This guy's just being rude. Welcome, our guest. Yeah, Mr. Deacon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks.
How does it feel to have a last name Deacon and you build worlds?
I hadn't really thought about it that way, to be honest with you.
That's some godly stuff.
So I think maybe just to kick off, like I was saying to you before we started, when I looked at your bio, I even had some misconceptions about where you were at or what you were doing. So maybe just give us a quick breakdown of what you're currently at. I know you've been on the scene for a few years, but you've done quite a lot compressed into those few years. So yeah, maybe just give us a quick bio.
Sure. Okay, cool. So my name's Dale Deacon. Predominantly, I spend most of my time programming. I think that clarifies things for most folks. I am a world builder, so I build worlds in virtual reality. I run a company called worldbuild.io. And I do a little bit of community organizing, you know, including the Africa XR Report, the We Are VR meetups, and I also help out with, you know, general organizing with, well, you know, wherever I can really help build the ecosystem.
I think you'd be modest. So for example,
really modest. You can hear it's like I do this, but I'm like, hey, this man is a rock star. Yeah,
so I had to almost choose my lane for this particular conversation because there's particular interest on my side that I wanted to dive into that I have a really strong interest in, which is, you know, the more VR direct space in terms of the immersive spaces in VR chat, you know, the world building in that space, a little bit of your work that's been recognized at the Rain Dance or the Venice Film Fest. But for this particular conversation, what we want to do is take a little more of an you know, upper view in terms of and reflecting a little bit on your recent moderation of XR panel that was at the Fakugezi Festival. There was a number of individuals there from around the continent. So I think let's keep the conversation up there and just have an overview in terms of the, you know, the ecosystem a little bit in South Africa and by extension Africa. What are the opportunities and challenges? And maybe just start a little bit by briefing us, you know, in terms of that particular panel that you did just a month or so ago and kind of, you know, your experience of that and the what the individuals there are doing.
Okay. So to give some context, the Fakugezi Festival happens every September at the Chimolohong Precinct across the road from BITS here in Johannesburg. I moderated a panel amongst different extended reality experts from South Africa. We had Tanzania represented there. Some friends who from France who are involved in also funding and creating opportunities locally. A panel of XR experts. And I think that sort of really is one of the big things that the important points when it comes to organizing community and building local capability in this technology is that we have experts. They just don't get heard very often. So that's why we started the We Are VR Jozi community, is once a month we meet up, hang out, and we hear from one of the experts in the community who are already working on something really interesting and cool and who are able to share what went well, what went badly, what they learned, what tools they used, just being able to, you know, so everybody in the audience gets to walk away, you know, better informed about how they can go about, you know, integrating and this technology into their own workflow with it, whichever way that is necessary. But it also leaves the speakers and the guests, the guest speakers, should I say, with a little bit of publicity. And I think that's something that really we need to focus on, you know, is just sharing the stories of already really great creators who are doing really cool stuff locally.
Interesting. If you were to build an XR world just for a day, what would that look like?
I've had this project, this personal world that I've been building for a couple of years now, which is a lot longer time frame than for like a couple of months corporate contract gig. But I think like in Star Trek, in those old episodes of Star Trek, they used to have the holodeck where you could go on like an adventure. You could go sit on the beach for a while, or you could escape to a forest. You could escape to these really serene places. So I've been working on something along those lines.
To escape.
A way to just take a breather, catch a breath.
You know, nice.
Calm, collect yourself, that sort of thing.
Interesting.
So I think like really scenic places are a really nice use case for VR. But also you can play around with a bit more adventurous stuff. You could meditate on the moon, looking at the Earth.
Or that'd be nice.
You could minimize yourself to like atomic scale. I've got a friend who's really into that concept. So, you know, it kind of depends on what you're into, I guess.
You could literally save Elon Musk billions of dollars and just build him a Mars.
Oh, I don't know if he'd be happy with that. Imagine all the government contracts he'd lose out on.
Yeah, that wouldn't be such a great idea, I guess. If you would go around a room, right, and ask everyone to define this idea of immersion, I think you'd get differently interesting answers, right? And I'm wondering, what does this concept of immersion and immersive technology mean for you?
Yeah, that's a super good question. And it's actually something that we take super seriously in the meetups.
Yeah.
Every time we have a meetup, we lay out, like, we try to get the jargon out of the way. Because, I think that's the thing that scares people a lot about technology, is you hear these experts talking about, and they use these crazy terms that you've never heard, and you're like, whoa, that sounds super intimidating.
Right.
But, like, in reality, it's relatively simple. I think XR has a lot of jargon, but you can simplify it this way.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you have virtual reality. And I think most people have a good sense of what virtual reality is.
We have virtual meetings.
Right. So in virtual reality, you put a headset on and you go to a virtual environment.
Right.
So that's the sort of one technology that we're playing with in extended reality, which is the umbrella term for all of these things. On the other hand, you have augmented reality, which is like when you open up Instagram and you put it on a filter and it gives you bunny ears, right? It's augmenting your reality using technology. So we use the term extended reality to cover those two use cases. And there's a lot in the middle as well. Like the Apple Vision Pro sits somewhere in the middle where you have a dial where you can turn from like virtual reality to real world.
Interesting.
So extended reality is basically the big umbrella term that we're using. But like you say, immersive media is also one that you could use. Like it's also a relatively broad term to talk about these technologies.
All right.
So how would you describe the current ecosystem, the XR ecosystem within, I don't want to go too broad and say Africa, but what I mean is based on your direct experience and who you deal with on the continent, even in South Africa, while you can look at the European markets, North American markets, and you see there's fair amount of funding. There's guys with quite large studios doing some really very difficult, chunky, amazing work. And there's the spirit is here, the passion is here. Where do you see Africans kind of fitting into that or playing a role in that, or do you feel that they should be fitting into those ecosystems, or do there's enough of an ecosystem or interest here that there's space for them to do amazing work here? How would you, like, how do you conceptualize that space for people here?
Well, one of the lessons I learned this year is that many industry professionals are thinking about the immersive industry in a very similar way that they think to the way that they talk and think about the film industry. Mm-hmm. You have production teams, you have a schedule that you roll out, you have the distribution channels often at festivals. So I think you could, if you squint, you could look at it in the way of film. And if you see it in that light, then storytelling would be a massive strength for us. We have interesting thinkers, interesting writers, interesting characters. You know, so the potential to tell stories in an immersive, with an immersive tool set, I would say the potential is really big there. So I would say that's definitely a huge advantage that we have, that we've got a lot of creativity here.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it gets quite difficult talking about industry scale, because even on a city scale, it's difficult to talk about it authoritatively, because the big headset manufacturers, they don't give specific details about how many headsets they sold in this city or mm-hmm. this country mm-hmm. or this continent. They're pretty vague about it. So even the communities, not everybody who's working on this stuff is involved in the community. They might just be working at home on their own late at night with headphones in. So it's hard to say for 100% certain this is how it is, but there are definitely some certain glimmers of some certain insights that we can take away.
Interesting. So is the industry, looking at Africa, is it sustainable? Can it grow? Can it scale? Can it attract investment? In this sense, when you look at the global North, America and China and Europe, they include a lot of entertainment within the XR sector, right? But when you look at Africa, it's storytelling, it's education, it's cultural stuff. Is that scalable enough? Is that package good enough to attract investment, local and international? Looking at our competitors in the global North, we don't have a lot of entertainment included in this as the global North does. And I'm wondering what we have, is it enough to attract investment and to scale the products that we produce in the sector?
Yeah. It's a tricky thing. Maybe like the elephant in the room is that these devices cost a lot of money.
Mm.
And some countries have a lot more expendable cash than we do. So those countries, you know, America has loads of people who are working on this stuff, because for them, the investment into a gaming computer and a VR headset is much more realistic than for the average South African, which is just, you know, an economic reality that we have to wrap our heads around. The challenge is, well, with the resources that we have, with the people that we have, and with the, you know, the ecosystem that we have, how do we compete?
Mm.
And, you know, I think the people that are competing, I think within within our borders, we have some of the best in the world.
Interesting. But with what we've got, can we sell African stories? Can we compete with entertainment products made for this technology?
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. We compete with African stories, our Shaka Zulu, our
absolutely.
Other monarchs and stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you see it now a lot in Netflix. The desire for novel storytelling is there. You know, I think the audience wants interesting characters. They want unusual plot twists and unconventional storytelling off the Hollywood beaten track.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it does echo the point when we were interviewing Eduardo Kashishu from the Fakugezi Festival director, and we were talking about that exact point in terms of when we're referring to the awards and how he was selecting the winners of the awards and how he's kind of conceptualizing the entries there. There was a, for some reason I always forget it. It was commended, but it didn't win, and it was that Disney production that's on Netflix.
Yeah, I remember that.
Was it Quasimodo? What's it called?
No, it wasn't Quasimodo.
But anyway,
Quasimodo won.
But that production, so it was very much an African story, and majority of the people that were working on the production were actually from the continent, or many of them from South Africa. But the production actually happened in North America, and there was an issue there in the sense of, like, okay, it's a commendable project. It's it's something that should win, but the question was, okay, are we rewarding the production, as in the African storytelling aspect of it, or are we rewarding the production? If it was rewarding the production, then it's not an African production per se, even though it is. It's an African story. And that it goes to your point in the sense that, you know, there is, and I can feel in certain different sectors, there is a lens coming, kind of pointing down towards us in the sense of looking at us for creativity, for really good storytelling, if not production qualities. But the production qualities are there. They're just, we don't have the scale of studios at this stage. And my feelings would be that, and this kind of leads in my next question for you, you know, say for the next 5 years or so, if you're in your particular viewpoint from the XR perspective, from a studio production perspective, from, you know, even having like volumetric studios, being able to build out really nice executions within the VR space, do you see that developing? Do you see investment coming here? Is there funding coming here? I mean, just in your particular viewpoint, yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see it a lot more. It's definitely there. There's some very passionate people who are pushing in that direction, but I think not at a rate that's sufficient to, you know, create a load of jobs quickly. You know, I think that's one of the biggest benefits of immersive media, is that there is potential to build a new industry here. And I think if we recognize that, we can do that relatively quickly, but it requires a lot of investment, a lot of good people. So yeah, it's there, it's growing, it has been growing for a long time, but I think we could definitely supercharge it.
Interesting. I think our strengths are in education and culture, and I think largely that would require some government injection in terms of funding. Do you see a lot of government participation in funding projects in this space?
Not a lot, but I think that's probably for a good reason. I think there's, you know, there's some very serious, you know, health issues and employment issues, and
okay.
Yeah, there's a very serious demanding pressure on government at the moment. So I'm not expecting government to come and, you know, be the ones to take this industry forward. To be honest, I think it's this. I suspect. I mean, from what I've seen over the years. I suspect it's going to be private industry that picks it up and runs with it.
Interesting.
You know, it's the potential to sell products, you know, software products to an international market.
Yeah.
Is a pretty clear business case. So
will it be inclusive at that point if it's just spearheaded by private? I would imagine if government gets involved, there could be some subsidies. Some of the tools and gadgets that are built here could be affordable because of that subsidy. But if there isn't and it's just spearheaded by private, would it be inclusive at that point?
Well, I mean, look, if government gets involved and they make it inclusive, I'm all for it.
Okay.
I'm just saying I don't expect it. I think when it comes to inclusivity and, you know, really telling our own stories, it speaks to the imperative that we do need our own storytellers and our own artists to pick up these tools and tell their stories. But again, you know, it also points again to a business need.
Yeah,
the business need for good entertainment and interesting stories. So I hear what you're saying. Like, government is welcome to get involved. I just haven't seen much movement in that regard.
Interesting.
So at the AVI, Josie, when was that? That was in September, I think. You familiar with that? There was a guy there from Namibia. His name escapes me at the moment, but I'll put it in the description after the video. He was doing a fair number of sort of archival or historical type work within the VR space. And in my view, there would be, and you can correct me if the view stands or not, but there's a fair amount of work within, you know. Educational institutions like VITS or even the universities, they have an interest. They either have some archive things that they have an interest in making more accessible or creating an educational angle on some sort of cultural, some sort of history that they want to, you know, bring back into the fore. And a lot of them are using VR as kind of a ways to do that. Doing it well or not is beside the point, but doing it in a way that we feel, you know, outside of making the big splash from an entertainment perspective or, you know, some other larger production, do you feel that's applicable more so today. I mean, I like seeing that kind of stuff. Often they're not really that well done, in the sense that it's not a great experience. But nevertheless, I see the intention behind it, and I see the point they're trying to do, and it's always applauded. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get what you're trying to do there. And because the institutions are paying for that kind of thing, you know, there are actually some guys learning some decent skills in that space and doing some good work. Do you have some examples or some views on that and how that fits into the larger, you know, the ecosystem, what we're trying to build, or even whether it's a valid means of using VR?
Yeah, I think there are, I mean, so we have to be a little bit careful in being specific about the applications, because when it comes to, say, preserving archival setup initiative, that sounds to me like an augmented reality sort of, you want to photogrammetry scan particular artifacts and be able to share that or something along those lines, which is a very different use case to creating a virtual reality educational experience. They're quite different products at the end of the day, quite different projects at the end of the day. So, you know, that said, I have heard that a lot of museums internationally and locally are getting involved in using immersive technologies to make the exhibits a little bit more engaging, get youngsters super excited about engaging with the content. I think the potential is huge in that space. Although I think the potential is pretty big in most spaces, because what you're doing is you're digitizing the real world. And that helps you scale. That helps you send that out on a global market or on a national scale. I think the potential is definitely there. And I think you're right. There have been some pretty cool examples along those lines. I mean, I did a project with the Origin Center here at WITS, and we digitized scans of, or should I say, molds of different pre-human hominids. And you could get the skulls, you could put the skull on the table and twirl it around using your phone, you could assess them, and we use that for educational purposes. But I mean, that's just one example of many, I think.
Absolutely.
Interesting. So what are some of the ethical questions that developers in the space should be asking themselves, given the concerns around this space in privacy, ethical, in culture preservations, and so on and so forth? What are some of the questions that developers should be asking themselves in terms of ethics?
Yeah, there's quite a lot. I mean, I think privacy is definitely one of the big ones. We used to give Facebook a really hard time about infringing on our privacy, and it seems like we're sort of past that now. Everyone's cool with it. You know?
Yeah, we don't care anymore. Just press accept on those terms and conditions.
I mean, that's a really big ethical issue right there.
Right.
Headsets have cameras on them.
Yeah.
You know, they're scanning your room. Iris scanning is also a pretty invasive way, I would say, of getting data from the person the audience. So we need to hold companies and you know, makers to account if they are found to be exploiting that somehow. But I think it speaks to a slightly larger issue of like our phones have cameras on them too, you know. So if we don't mind that, should we mind the VR cameras on our headsets? I don't know. I mean, it's I think it's a really big issue that we need to tackle sooner or later. The bugbear for me, and the one that I think nobody's talking about, but I think we really should be talking about, is violence in virtual reality.
Violence.
Well, so playing violent video games in virtual reality,
because it's so real. Yeah,
it's enacting. You know, a murderous thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's different from sitting on your couch going, you know, you're holding a controller and
so you have a knife and you're out there.
Yeah. I mean, the Hitman game has a VR version, and you're like garroting people. And I think that has a slightly different psychological effect sitting on your couch and tapping.
Because you're literally sweating yourself out there, punching and kicking.
Yeah.
Quite engaging, though.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So I guess it's that. How do you strike that balance? Create an engaging, and an entertaining environment, but still being ethical about it.
Well, I think we also need research. We need to research the psychological effects of these things on people.
Yeah.
And that way we can inform policy and make laws that ban things that are unethical.
I mean, you thought the politicians, particularly in North America, getting involved with the values of video games like Grand Theft Audio and you know, that was a big thing a few years ago. Wait until the immersive tech gets there, in the sense of the immersion of playing a violent game in VR. That's an interesting perspective. You think we had problems with politicians then? I'm dying of heat in here. I don't know if anyone else is, but
pretty
anyway.
Toasty.
It's very warm.
Besides that, so if you've seen me glistening off my face, well, it's just because that's what that is. I did want to ask you a little bit about the XR report. This was a report that I think you were the lead or the pilot, or how would I describe your role in that report? I know there are a number of people involved, which was published in 2022. Which, in my view, at that time, there were people that you guys featured in that report that I had no idea existed, that were doing really interesting, amazing work. Maybe just tell us a little more about the report and what the intentions were behind it, or the need you felt to do that report.
Yeah, happy to. And thanks for asking. It's something I don't get. I'd love to talk about more. Mm. So my role in that project was report lead. And I worked, it started January 2021. I had a conversation with Aram Ibrahim from Nigeria. And we both agreed, so he does a lot of community, XR community development in Nigeria, and I do it here. And we both completely were 100% on board. Our call was about 5 minutes long. We were like, we need this. We need to assess the state of African extended reality. Because there are no stats about this. It's really difficult to put up a proposal document in front of somebody if you don't have any numbers.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, let's do this. So we got in touch with Judith Okonkwo from Nigeria as well. She's a fantastic community developer and creator and producer. And she helped us get some funding from Meta to run this report. We did a survey, quite a lengthy survey. In retrospect, it was maybe a little bit too long, but we ran the survey for a couple of months, got as much input as we could from as many countries in Africa as we possibly could. One of the interesting things we found is that Facebook even limits certain countries' reach within other countries in Africa. So we had to try our best to try and infiltrate different communities in different countries so that we could just learn. That was the entire intention of the report, was we wanted to learn as a community so that we could share the insights as a community. And the result of that, after months of hard work, was the Africa XR report, which was over 300 pages long.
300 pages?
Did
you read all of it?
Big, nicely big designed. It's not like all text, There's lots of big images and designs.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like, no, it's a PDF, but it's like...
Shout out to Gareth Steele, who made it look just beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you go through all the 300 pages?
Sure.
Damn. This man.
I'm yet to get one printed out. I want to print it and hang it on the wall.
You want to frame 300 pages?
Well, yeah. It'll have to have a big backing, but it was such a great project. And we're actually working on the second follow-up one now. So we'll probably kick that off early next year. We'll get the survey going, do a whole bunch more interviews, and try and refresh our stats.
You know, it'll be interesting. I'm sure, like, the number of people and individuals and organizations just around the continent, like, it would have increased, I suspect, exponentially, like, just, like, the number of people involved in the space doing really cool, interesting work. I'm sure it's going to be a 600-page report, at least.
we'll probably try to keep it down.
It's hard to be comprehensive, right? Like you got to decide, are you going to be comprehensive about it, or are you going to be, like... And if you're only going to select certain organizations or individuals, what's your what's your metric, right? So but anyway, yeah, that's your problem.
just to explain, I did get some backlash on who we featured and who we didn't.
Okay.
And the way we did it is we sent out a broad call to every community that we could and said, if you want your story of yourself or your company or your project featured in the report, we're open to it. And we got a lot of submissions and we put them all in. And then there were people afterwards who were like, oh, I didn't hear about the call. Why'd you neglect us? And we're like, well, we tried. But that's a cool opportunity for next for the next one, is more stories. Yeah. That's the thing that fleshes out 300 pages, is there are a lot of interviews.
Right. If I'm a developer and I'm going through that report, what do you hope I take away from it?
Optimism. No, really. That's you know, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about.
Right.
You know, it's a technology with a lot of potential, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinions, I guess. And you know, we're picking it up and we're running with it, but we're making it our own. I think that's okay. That's the important part.
Would you say XR is the pinnacle of the of great experience? And if so, should it be likened to, for example, if you want a great driving experience, you're gonna go for an AMG, a Porsche, or an M-Power, Scott. M-Power, great driving experience.
Okay, fantastic.
Yes, do not drive a Renault for great driving experience. Now, if this is the pinnacle for great experience, should we be trying to scale it down and trying to get cheaper versions of it, or should it just be the pinnacle of great user experience, great immersion, great... The ultimate, if you want to be immersed in an environment, this is what you go for. And the case should just be closed there without having to try and be creative in creating little pockets for cheaper products to come in so that there's inclusion, essentially. Should we leave it at the empower of digital experience?
Yeah, that's a big question. Mm.
We ask the big questions here at the Ingram.
Amen.
Like... If you want to climb Mount Everest, VR is never going to be able to replace that, right? So if you want that pinnacle experience, if you want that real, like, flesh and blood, just your heart's racing experience, better to climb the mountain, right?
Right.
But if you want to, say, minimize yourself to the size of pea and then, you know, fight against ants on the table, like, there's no real way you can do that. So, right. But you can simulate that. And I think that's one of the interesting advantages of virtual reality. You can simulate a broader set of things than you can do in real life, like a much broader set, like a billion times more things you can do in virtual reality than you can do in real life. And, you know, potentially cheaper too, right? I mean, so there is a VR experience where you can climb Mount Everest.
Oh.
You know, it doesn't take a couple of flights and all that money. And
you don't need an oxygen tank.
You're not gonna die,
right? So, it is a paid down exactly. experience for sure.
Okay.
So, what are you working on? What's going on at the moment?
Well, I just got off a bunch of projects. So at the moment, I'm just trying to catch up on sleep. We just had a project. I worked with Electric South and an artist called Mikhail the Muzzin.
Mm-hmm.
And he created a really interesting project called the Dollhouse for Queer Imaginaries. He designed this really interesting VR experience of a three-storied house, a three-story building, where you go from the first room, which is sort of the dressing room, you get oriented. And then you move up to the middle, which is the onboarding area, where he does a monologue about his own experience growing up as a queer person, and, you know, and trying to find a sense of home and family and safety and security. And then you move up to the third level, where you can actually shrink down to doll size and run around a doll house and make the doll house your own. You make it your own space. Mm. And that was a really fun interaction, because you have this table with people at people size and people at doll size, and they're all interacting and sort of playing around with each other. It was a really fun project. So that just went to Infodoc Lab in Amsterdam. So that's been the one that I've been working on recently. I also did some cinematic stuff with some folks in the US. But I think next year, my big push is to do my meditation experience that I was talking about just now, you know, something that, so I like to launch on Steam with my own high quality meditation experience, hopefully by end of next year.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I like the meditation one. Damn. Once it's out, this man must hook me up.
Yeah, I'll give you guys a shot.
Yeah, man, I'd like to go to the moon and just kick it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And just I know I didn't really want to go down the rabbit hole on this one, but the this year at the Venice Immersive Film Fest, you had a big shout out for Strange Ways,
right?
Which was maybe tell us a little more about that. It was a really crazy, weird world. I spent a fair amount of time in there, actually. Lots of like different rooms you can poke into. I know that, you know, the artwork, you worked with artists a little more directly, a 2D artist, funny enough, and to translate that into like into a VR world has its own challenges. And maybe tell us a little bit about your involvement in that project.
Sure. So Strange Ways is the name of the project. We took it to Venice Immersive, which is a part of the Venice Film Festival this year. We took it to Rain Dance as well in the UK. It was a project that was sort of started probably about 3 years ago, I think. A friend in the UK, Adam Lieber, and I collaborated on a project called The Bonkers Gardens, where we took an artist, Chris Bianchi's cartoon drawings. You know, he's an illustrator by trade. We took his characters and he took his environments, and we turned it into a virtual reality world. And we ended up winning the Renaissance of the Moniverse, Renaissance of the Metaverse competition run by an organization called Mona in the States. And based off that, Adam teamed up with a guy in Cape Town, Alex Bosman, who did a second part to it. And then for Venice, we brought those two parts together and added a third section. And so in the end, and we also roped in Egbert Vestra, who did the avatars, so you can become one of the characters and go through this crazy rabbit hole of a journey through this really, I mean, it's been called a very psychedelic experience because you're falling down this rabbit hole, you're meeting these crazy characters, you know, you're constantly going like trying to make sense of the world. And the way that we designed it is so that it does feel like you're transitioning deeper and deeper and deeper into the deepest, darkest depths of the artist's imagination. That was the sort of concept that we were trying to play with there. It got a great reception in Japan, funnily enough. I think they really enjoyed the wacky zaniness of it.
It's wacky, yeah.
It's super wacky. It's quite an unforgettable experience, I think. Yeah, it's just one of those things.
It's unique.
Where
it's nice.
Interesting. Very, outside of the projects that you personally worked on, what are some of the local successful products that were scalable that you have seen?
Well, I mean, that Strange Ways projects had three South Africans.
Okay.
You know, we did all of the development and most of the design work. So I would call that a South African project, first and foremost. The director was English, but it was made in South Africa.
Cool.
But, you know, it's not just me. I mean, you got to also look at, you know, there were some real smash hits in South Africa. So Free Lives, the game development studio in Cape Town, they made a game called Gorn, which is like a gladiator fighting simulator. Very cartoonish, very fun sort of game they've made. And it's been a big international success. It's one of the best-selling VR games in history.
Yeah.
The guys at Eden Labs made their own headset, and they also spun out a project called Get Well Pals that which sort of preps little kids for different medical procedures so that they're not so anxious and afraid.
Okay. Who did that?
A company called Eden Labs.
Eden Labs.
Yeah.
South African company.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was saying outside, yeah, there's South Africa's, strangely enough, well featured in the international VR world. I don't know why culturally how that worked or how that added up, but there's a number of individuals here that are doing really, really great interesting work. International work. Yeah, like even Rick Tweek on his Uncanny Alley, or he made that Club Black Sun, and he had that really interesting show at Venice as well this year. Also very very much a South African led productions. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the list goes on. Ulrico at Habitat XR is doing some amazing stuff with 360 video and immersive film for like putting people in the position to observe nature. So they've done a lot of stuff with the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. You know, so they've done a lot of like conservation, XR for conservation, which is a really interesting angle. I think it's quite unique as well. Devesh Naidu from Joburg, I think he's in Cape Town now, but he's running a company called Simulon, which they're using augmented reality to replace or to inject 3D assets, 3D like animations, like high quality Hollywood style animations into traditional footage.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean, the list goes on.
So just in closing, or you know, one last question for me anyway would be, I know there's a number of different paths to choose in the road to XR as such. I mean, there's a number of different areas you can, different lanes you can choose. What would be your, you know, advice for someone that knows they're interested in it, but not quite sure where their access point is or how to get involved? What would you say, what would be your advice or suggestion to them to say where to start to figure it out?
I think it's important to get your hands dirty and experiment. See what you like, see what you don't like. You know, my hard drive is filled of hundreds of, you know, experiments that only lasted a day. So I would say, I would definitely recommend getting your hands dirty. And to do that, you need a decent computer. And, you know, the price of computers is pretty crazy at the moment. And I don't know if it'll come down, but I see it as an investment and an ability to create. So I would say get your hands dirty. And if you haven't got one already, get as best a computer as you can. Because it's a tool. It's the tools that we use today to create work.
And tap into the communities. There's actually a number of really nice community groups you could probably tap into, and there's full of experts and people that have their hands very dirty. So
absolutely. I mean, that was the first thing I did.
Yeah. Right? Are there communities in Joburg?
Yes.
And if one wants to join those communities, how would they do that? Can you mention a few, maybe?
I mean, if anybody's listening to this and wants to get involved, you can get in touch with me personally.
Cool.
I'll point you in the direction that you want to, any direction you're keen on. Otherwise, you can check out We Are VR Josie on Facebook. We have a We Are VR Josie WhatsApp group as well. Okay. It's on LinkedIn as well. There's the Metaverse Crew, which is also a very welcoming group. It's a bit more of an international group, but it's also a very welcoming group. I'd recommend having a look at the Africa XR report and seeing which kinds of projects you think are interesting and getting in touch with those folks. You know, I mean, because that's what I did, right? So yeah. I got involved about 7 years ago, and I quit everything and I doubled down on XR. And the first thing I did was, okay, so who's doing this? Who can I learn from? And I started to reach out, and you know, because there wasn't a community of, you know, a meetup or a place that we could, you know, a central place that we could meet like-minded people, that was one of the first projects that we did, is we put together a community.
A decade from now, what do you reckon XR looks like in Africa?
Probably pretty different. Pretty different. I mean, if we think about how far it's come in the last decade,
has anything changed?
Well, yeah. I mean, so the big change would be consumer VR.
Okay.
Or consumer AR, right? As soon as Pokemon Go became a big international hit, we stopped caring that it was augmented reality. But I mean, that was the big breakthrough moment. That was the iPhone moment for augmented reality. We don't call it augmented reality. We just call it Pokemon Go. It's just what it is. And same thing with filters and on social media. As soon as filters became the norm, we were just like, well, it's just filters. You know?
Right.
It's always been there. But it hadn't. It was like there was a definitive moment where it became a thing. And then once it did, we took it for granted. And I think that we're doing that with every technology, really. You know, as soon as it kind of becomes the norm, we're like, okay, so, but what's next? Which is cool. Which is kind of why I like technology. You know? There's always something interesting around the corner. So I reckon in 10 years' time,
that's far, though.
Given our infrastructure challenges.
10 is far. You could say 5 even. Like 5 is going to be different as well.
I mean, even 1 year, I think, is going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
I think next year is going to be the year. Well, it's going to be a very interesting year for smart glasses.
Okay.
We're seeing a lot of that sort of take shape at the moment. A lot of companies are starting to roll out smart glasses, which is a piece of hardware that facilitates augmented reality.
Privacy concerns aside, don't worry about
well,
it.
Maybe it's a good time to bring up privacy concerns.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's the perfect moment to actually really address the issue.
Because you can basically get face recognition in glasses, so you can cruise around, you can actually look at someone, and that person, they'll do a search on that face, and then they can tell you exactly who that person is without them knowing about it, or giving, because everyone's on the social. Everyone's.
I look at Dale. And I get a profile.
Get the stats.
Yeah, you get stats. You can, because they'll just do a search for your face. So all your images, they'll get your Facebook profile, they'll get your LinkedIn, whatever, you can say what you are.
That's dangerous for students, though.
But those are the issues with these glasses, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's
going to fail an exam at that point.
Well, I mean, who's going to fail an exam with ChatGPT in their pocket?
Yeah,
but I mean, if I'm wearing them damn glasses and I'm sitting in front of a newspaper, of a question paper, and this thing is reading and giving me answers.
We'll adjust. Hey, we'll adjust just like we did when we adjusted after the internet. Do you remember the world before the internet?
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, I do. So.
Yeah, you didn't get gray hair for nothing.
Yeah, I earned my grays, man. So you adjust. You kind of, society kind of shifts 100%. Along with it, yeah.
All right. That's cool. That's cool.
Thanks we'll for coming see. In, man.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
Yeah, there's so many more things we could chat about. I really want to get into the more creative space, and I think there's a separate conversation to be had around that and the artistic side about what we're talking about and the world building, which is kind of my entry point. Like, that was a space I was really like, oh wow, you know, I really want to know what's what in this space and who's who.
Just are because you investing
those,
in this
there's those immersive worlds for me were just were mind blowing.
Are you investing in this space?
My time and energy. I haven't put money into it just yet.
Damn it, put your money.
Well, I put money into it in the sense of enabling myself. Yeah, sure. So I buy the gear, no, buy what I need.
Support, buy products. And
oh, yeah, put yeah, money I've, in I've some stuff. I've bought apps and things, yeah, 100%. Oh,
okay, cool.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Right. Good man. Yeah.
Cool. Any final closing comments on yourself? I mean, VR of the future, you know?
Viva VR!
I think it's an interesting technology that just opens up so many new creative avenues. If you're into exploring the frontier of where technology is sort of leading us and where we're leading it, and exploring what we're capable of, I would strongly suggest getting stuck in. But also, like I said it just now, getting your hands dirty, super important. It's super, super important. Getting in there, trying to make something for yourself, make something for your friends, make something cool, I think that's really important. There's a lot of folks who take this like high level approach and they're like, oh, I'm going to build a business plan, then I'm going to hire developers, and they take this massively estranged look at technology and they go, how can I use this thing for my own to make a fortune? I don't think that's, it's possible to do that, but I don't think that's as fun or interesting or valuable. I think what's more valuable is people actually engaging with the stuff and making it our own.
Cool. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the only Deacon I know that actually builds worlds. This has been the Angle Podcast. Please don't forget to like, share, subscribe. All the links in the descriptions below. And until next time.
See ya.